Welcome to Go Deeper, Wyndham Art Gallery's podcast channel, part of our Go Deeper program that provides an in-depth look at each of our exhibitions. Today you are tuning in to an abridged recording of the Futurism Artists in Conversation featuring exhibiting artists Frahia Jama and co-curator Wani.
Woman Jika. My name is Larry Walsh, or Uncle Larry Walsh. I'm an elder of the Tunurong people, and we at the city of Wyndham and Wyndham Art Gallery. We'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, the Kulin Nations, and we pay our respects to their ancestors, and we pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. And we also pay our respect that their sovereignty was never ceded.
Artists in Conversation, Futurism. Welcome to Go Deeper, Wyndham Art Gallery's podcast channel, part of our Go Deeper program that provides an in-depth look at each of our exhibitions. Today you are enjoying an abridged recording of the Futurism Artists in Conversation with exhibiting artists Frahia Jama and co-curator Wani.
Frahia is a visual diasporic storyteller. I am somebody who's captivated by visuals. I just recently found out that there are people in this world who don't think in pictures or words. They just think, and I don't know, they don't even have a voice. And I'm just like, I'm constantly living in my head. I'm constantly seeing images. It's like a weird thing where I'm a visual artist, but I'm also a wordsmith. I started off as a writer first, like a creative writer, let me just say that first, like a novelist and then a poet. And then I got into graphic design and then photography through my sister. And the way I navigate this world is I'm constantly finding methods that work for me, where I feel at home in what I do, no matter what I do. I always play this game of, is this decision something that will allow me to thrive, or is it something that's allowing me to survive? Which I'm learning there's a difference. I've been surviving for so long, and now I'm choosing what makes me feel like I'm gonna thrive. And I basically use images, like visuals, and marry it with words, like creative words. A lot of people don't seem to care, but on Instagram, I've mastered the art of micro stories in my captions. So at least like 80% of my pieces, like my visual pieces, are accompanied by like a little short story in the caption, just because I started off as a creative writer, I always before the images, before the visuals, before anything is shared, there's always a story. So trigger warning, murder. Two of my dearest friends last year, one of them's anniversary is this month, sadly, were murdered. Last year, July and November. And then I had a family tragedy that made me think about who I am and what my legacy is. Because both those women, especially in particular, were powerhouses. And I know imposter syndrome is a thing and it hurts, but it's been paralyzing my need to figure out my legacy. So that's what I've been wondering these days, like when I pass, not if I pass. Shout out to those people who always say if they pass, they're immortal. what do I want to leave behind? And it reminds me of my first solo exhibit, which I intentionally wanted to be in Toronto, simply because I had opportunities to not be for it not to be in Toronto, but it mattered to me that my first solo exhibit was in Toronto, the city that raised me. that entire exhibit was six art pieces of young Somali girls with attitudes on their faces, except the youngest one, because I wanted it to be a love letter, like an unapologetic love letter. I want my legacy, I want to leave behind art and thoughts and words and anything that's connected to me, to be like a home for people who share my identities, right? I'm very aggressively pro-Black, and then also pro-Muslim within my Blackness. Like, my Islam identity is nothing without my Blackness. And that really is something I always point out. Like, whenever I'm introduced, I always make sure that people introduce me as a Black Muslima from Somalia who immigrated to Canada. Because that really matters to me, because my faith is Black. I want, like, when people think of who Farhia is, I want them to know that I purposely carved and made my art, my sense of expression to be as unapologetically as Black as possible. And I lost opportunities as a result, but they were never my opportunities to have anyways. So it's fine, right? Like, even to call them opportunities feels dishonest, because they were never made for someone like me. Yeah, like, the question, who am I, is so loaded, because ever since those three particular tragedies happened to me recently in July, November, and March of this year, I've been, like, redefined in me and, like, trying my best. Like, life is so fleeting, and it sucks that it takes a death, a traumatic death most of all, but a death to make you, like, go back to the drawing board, that's your life, and be like, what am I doing? Like, what am I really doing? Like, who is Farhia? Would Farhia, young me, be proud of Farhia right now? And that's really, that's, like, the most powerful question you can ask, because it's, like, will 8-year-old me be proud? Because when I was first a writer, like a creative writer, I literally did it out of loneliness, because nobody wanted to be my friend. And, like, looking back, it's like the wildest thing, because during recess, I was always usually the most visible. I wore hijab when I was a child. I was the most visible African girl. I was an immigrant. I was the most, like, there was Black kids, but they weren't, like, Somali, East African, African, really. They were mostly Caribbean, right? Mm-hmm. And I was visibly Muslim. So, like, I was like a plague. And I would learn in English, and, like, I struggled to learn English. But when I did learn English, I would write these short stories of, like, whatever thoughts I had, and would read it to my shadow during recess, because nobody was trying to play with me. So I was like, that's fine. I'm going to gather all these rocks. I'm going to gather all these leaves and these flowers that I used to steal from, like, some old lady neighbor from the school, and would tell my shadow and these, like, nature related things, my stories, which I don't even know what those stories were, but it helped me figure out who I was in a way. And then the most important, and I repeat in every interview, I was in middle school, and Harry Potter came out when I was in middle school, like 97 or something. And something I learned painfully was, like, a tough love lesson from my dad, where I think I was on, like, the second book or something, I don't know what it was, and I went to my dad in tears. I was like 12, and I told him, I said, I don't understand how this is a magical world and I still don't exist. Like, I don't get it. Which is why my dad gave me the tough lesson that he then introduced me to Toni Morrison, which was this idea of, why would this white woman represent you? Like, why would she feel why do you feel entitled to her representation belonging to you, right? Which was hard to swallow, because it takes a lot of, like, getting rid of your ego, especially as a child. But my stories went from being the protagonist being a blonde hair, blue eyed girl, because I felt like that's what people wanted to read, to like a little Somali girl. And every decision I make now reflects that girl who decided, who was writing those short stories. Would that for her be proud of me? I hope she would be proud of me, because since 2016, because before that, I've never featured white people in my art.
Respect.
I was ahead of the game. But I featured like non-black people of color, right? But I stopped. There's always exception to that, especially now that I'm into like K-pop and K-drama, but we're not going to talk about that. But like my art.
I saw your new crush.
Thank you. But like ever since 2016, when I learned a very painful lesson from somebody I really admired who broke my heart to in front of my youth that I was teaching, since 2016, I aggressively made all my art pro-Black, like completely Black. And not only Black, but very diasporic. Like there's a reason why I lead with diasporic visual storyteller, because my art is very, very diasporic. It's very like third culture. Like I marry a lot of English and Somali words together to reflect my identity of being Canadian and Somali at the same time, and never being enough. So it's like, I've been aggressively doing that. And like, I really, really hope young Farhia, who was writing these stories that nobody looked like her, despite she was like the creator of these stories, I hope she will be proud of me. I hope she is proud of me. Like that's literally who I am. I only exist to make young me proud. And like every decision is based off of that. I've walked away from so many things because I didn't think young me would be proud. And I like to sleep at night. So that's who I am. I am who I needed when I was younger. And I hope that a little like Somali girl who wears a hijab, especially because it's important to me as a non-visible Muslima to center hijabs and niqabs and like everything that's considered oppressive in my faith from outsiders, to center those elements, because I am privileged. Like only in the airport where my middle name is Muhammad am I ever bothered. So yeah, that's who I am. I am somebody who tries her best to live a legacy and a life really that makes young me, that little 12-year-old who was crying about not seeing herself, like really proud. I feel like I'm getting emotional, but I really love that girl. Like oh my God, I wrote eyes that were sparkly blue like the sky. And now I talk about the midnight sky, like orbs that were like, that harness the night power. And I'm just like, that's who I want to be. I am the person I needed young Farhia to see. That's who I want to be and am trying to be.